south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, got a lot of stuff to cover today. Let's get into it. First, a real estate question from Jeff. He says, about prices in Guatemala City and Antigua, Guatemala, and in between. What do you think the average price per square foot is in the above-mentioned areas? I can assume that the market will lose about 50% of its value in the next few years, just like here in the States. Additionally, Johnny, what are the closing costs like? Would a Guatemalan bank provide financing, or do you have to pay cash? I generally, myself, buy property in Colorado from a value-added perspective and almost always use seller financing. Is that a thing in Latin America? I have a strange feeling that I might need to invest in a house in order to get permanent residency. Thanks again. Signed, Jeff. All right, Jeffrey, just a few general things about real estate first. You're talking about Guatemala City and Antigua, Guatemala, and points in between. For those of you who haven't got the geography straight, Guatemala City is where you land when you fly into the country. It's right in the city. Now, where most gringos and expats end up living nearby or around is Antigua, Guatemala, which is about an hour from Guatemala City. An hour by car, that is. Well, let me point out for our listeners out there that what I'm going to say doesn't only relate to Guatemala City or Antigua, Guatemala and parts nearby. It relates to all of Latin America, even those gringified tourist areas. And you know, the chances are things will actually be worse in the gringified areas since it's all about tourism there. And tourism is the first shoe to drop when there's been an economic blowout. All right, let's first talk about low-end real estate. You've got poor and middle-class neighborhoods that gringos and expats should never consider. You've got middle-class neighborhoods, that'd be middle-class Latin style, which equates to lower middle-class in the States or kind of white trash. That would be the majority of housing here in Latin America, and I wouldn't consider any of that for gringos and expats either, although I do know quite a few long-term gringos and expats who end up living in middle-class Latino housing, but that's mostly because they're short on dough and they've got no other options and they don't want to go back to the States. Even under such reduced circumstances, they find living middle-class Latino style, again, that's kind of like living in a white trash neighborhood up in the States, preferable to going back to the States and toughing it out up there. So if you don't mind lowering your standards a little bit, living in a neighborhood where chicken buses, tuk-tuks, and rice burners are ripping by at all hours, with pushcart vendors hawking their goods from dawn to dusk, where everything, I mean everything, is kind of broken down and scruffy looking, where paint jobs and front yards look depressing, where you're hooked up to dirty city water that might only come out of the tap 8 or 10 hours a day, there's lots of litter outside, missing manhole covers, lots of busted sidewalks, dogs barking at all hours, sifting through the endless garbage. If you can handle that, you can live for next to nothing. It is an option, you know. And when we say a gringo's gone native, that means he's become part of that scene. Hey, that's no way I want to live. Only a very small percentage of gringos and expats live that way, but some do. And really, it's all about the money, what you can afford. And some say it's all about how much you drink. Because, you see, a place in a neighborhood like that might run you anywhere from $100 to $300 a month. Again, you're not going to want to live there unless you're down on your luck, you've hit the skids, or you're a backpacker staying on for a couple of months and don't want to pay the daily rate at a youth hostel. Because at $15 a night, if you're staying for months, it really does add up. Look, $15 a night, sharing beds, baths, and bed bugs at a youth hostel. That works out to $450 a month. What a catchy name for a low-rent franchise. You heard it here first. Bed, baths, and bed bugs. That's right, $450 a month. That's why you'll sometimes see a couple of backpackers get together and rent a place for $250 or $300 by the month in a Latin-style middle-class neighborhood. Of course, they'll trash the place, but that's to be expected. Again, I think for 99% of listeners out there, that style of living is not for you. Now, as far as buying up a property or two in middle-class Latin America because you want to be a landlord, well, that used to be a very good idea, especially around and near tourist destinations, since backpackers never fork out for the nice, expensive hotels. But all that's changed now. The real estate bubble's been popped. Being a landlord and trying to collect rent, or even trying to keep those rentals occupied. You're kidding me, right? All right, so let's talk about real estate prices in upper middle-class Latin American areas. Now we're talking about mostly gated, guarded subdivisions. Although there are some nice neighborhoods that aren't gated and guarded, with some nice old classic colonial homes. There's not that many of them anymore compared to the newer gated, guarded communities. And some of those really nice old colonial areas are going to seed as wealthier Latinos move to the burbs. Now, normally when you're discussing upper middle-class Latin American real estate, the good stuff, the nicely built stuff, roughly speaking, it's been running around $100 a square foot. Double that if you're on the gringo tourist trail, but soon that's going to collapse too, in a big way. Of course, over the next months to a year, when desperate sellers start throwing in the towel, I expect a lot of those prices will drop 50%. Now, as far as trying to get a Guatemalan or any Latino bank to finance your real estate, you longtime listeners will recall that many times I've said one of the sure signs of the bubble was that banks and finance companies were no longer asking for 20, 25, and 30% down, but 5%, sometimes 0% down. Cash is king now, and it looks like throughout Latin America, we're going to be looking at 30% down. However, as big numbers of properties foreclose and the banks take possession of them, all bets are off as to how they're going to be able to dump them. All I know is they're going to have some big auctions coming up. Oh, and there's so many new unfinished and half-built projects too. Just wait a couple of months and you'll see the fire sales. I guarantee you're going to see a lot of those projects offering 0% down. They're not bank financed. They're owner or developer financed. But look out. No matter how nice the project looks, if it's newly built or partially built and mostly vacant, it would be a big mistake for you to buy in no matter how cheap the price. You don't want to be the only solvent resident in a beautiful, mostly vacant project. For one thing, let's say it's only 25% occupied. Who's going to pay the maintenance on the place? You solvent guys, you 25% will be covering those. You get it. All right, then Jeffrey asked about closing costs. Turns out if you buy a place and it's not brand new, in other words, you're the second or third or tenth person in, you generally pay around a 3% sales tax. So you buy a place for 100 grand. You pay 3% tax, 3 grand. But maybe not, because there's a little trick that's often played with previously owned properties that can't be used with a brand new property or a first sale. That is, you and your lawyer make a side deal to give the seller two different payments. For that $100,000 example, you write up a bill of sale for 50 grand and you pay 3% on that, and the other 50 grand you hand over to the seller under the table. But on the books with the municipality, it only looks like it was sold for 50 G's. Now, again, I'm not advising you to do anything illegal. I'm just telling you what lots and lots of gringos, expats, and locals do. In fact, often your lawyer will suggest it, kind of greasing the skids for the sale, you know. So then are you ripping off the government? Of course. But if you look at it like every Latino I've ever known, getting over on the corrupt, lard-ass government is the national pastime. Because though you rarely get a chance to rip them off, they're ripping you off all the time. All right, so you heard the number 3% when you're buying an existing property, one that's not brand new. When it's a brand new property, you have to pay the IVA, or VAT tax, to the government. And you'll have to pay it on the full price. Since you'll be the first-time buyer, there's almost no way to get around it. So, for example, in Guatemala, their VAT tax is 12%. That means if you buy a $100,000 house, you're going to fork over 12 grand to their slovenly, pustulent government. Now, that's not to say you can't make a sweetheart deal with the seller, kind of like the one that was mentioned before, where you split it up in two payments and only pay tax on half of it. That way, you'll pay the 12% IVA or VAT tax only on 50 G's instead of 100. Well, you can try that, and most buyers will bring that up to the seller. But you see, often with new properties, they're in a gated, guarded subdivision where the developer is building most all the houses. And they won't want to do that kind of deal because they want to remain on the up and up. You see, the bigger and more first world-like the company that you're dealing with, the less likely they are to cook the books for you. And of course, you'll never be able to pull that off if you're buying into a residential tower as the first-time owner. Developers are not going to make side deals like that. They don't want to get into any trouble with the government down the line. And they know they would. For example, if they're selling off a residential tower and they've got 20 units and they're all around 100 grand and suddenly they sell one for 50, that'll send up a red flag with the municipality. Then again, if you're buying a place from a small mom and pop builder, they might do the deal for you because his houses are one-offs. Doesn't hurt to ask. After all, it is a tradition down here to do everything you can to get over on the government. Oh, and remember, you always want to have your lawyer in on those things. If you're trying to bend the rules, have him make the suggestions, not you. Anyway, that's what I've heard. Oh, and by the way, that's why so many astute Latinos and gringos and expats buy a house with an SA corporation. That way you can completely avoid both of those taxes, whether it's 12% IVA or VAT tax or the 3% sales tax. It's a loophole that's 100% legal. Because you see, with an SA corporation, you have shares, and you can sell your house or your property by just handing over the shares to the new buyer. So the seller passes the corporation to the new buyer, and everything in that corporation is now his. And the house, of course, is in the corporation. And that's it. The deal's done. Of course, again, you'll need a lawyer to handle that transaction because there will have to be some signatures and documents signed. Oh, and speaking of closing costs, a lawyer will generally charge 0.5% of the total selling price. All of that being negotiable, of course. That's $500 for a $100,000 house. And finally, as for closing costs, there's a municipality registry fee, which, depending on the country, ranges from 0.5% to 1.5%. Just another way for those human blood clots in government to gouge you. So bottom line, if you're buying a brand new property and you're the first one in, you'll pay the IVA, which is 12% in Guatemala, plus 0.5% for the registry in the municipality, plus 0.5% for your lawyer. Total, about 13% of the selling price. No small potatoes. However, if you're buying a used place, your second or third or tenth one in, you'll pay a 3% tax plus 0.5% tax for the municipality registry plus 0.5% for your lawyer, which works out to be a total of about 4% of the total price. Of course, that's if you're doing it totally on the up and up and you haven't made a side deal with the seller to split the payments so the registry shows a much lower sales price. Then again, if the property's in a corporation, a sociedad anónima, the shares will be handed over and all you'll do is pay the lawyer's 0.5% fee. What a deal. Again, leave it all up to your lawyer. He'll handle everything. Now, since we can expect tons of desperate sellers out there coming out of the woodwork in the next couple of months to a year or so, the question comes up, can I buy a property and just take over the seller's payments? In other words, get the seller in on the financing? Well, sure, that's always possible, but it's not common down here. People don't know what you're talking about. You have to explain it to them. You see, a lot of financing options you have up in the States are totally unknown to people down here. It's less complicated. Old school. Remember, in many ways, living here in Latin America is like going back 30 or 40 years in time. So it's not out of the question to get the seller in on the financing. It's just that you'll have to educate them. Though at first, they might look at you like you're nuts. You've got the gringo advantage going for you. And the fact that Latinos trust gringos a hell of a lot more than they trust their own. In fact, they'll come right out and tell you that. Somehow it seems like we've got this sterling reputation in many cases we don't deserve. Life ain't fair, but you knew that already. Oh, and speaking of lying, lard-ass government slugs. You know, I say that a lot, and I believe it 100%. As if we need more proof. Well, here's some. According to the international watchdog organization, SPIN, Political Communication Workshop, the president of Mexico, López Obrador, has made almost 25,000, yes, 1,000, untrue statements during his daily morning conferences since he came to power in December 2018. Yep, people in that organization are actually counting down the lies. And they said off the record, but I guess it's on the record now, it should be no surprise that Mexico's López Obrador would be first place in the Guinness Book of Records if there was such a category. The undisputed most deceitful leader on the planet. Oh, and this is off topic, but I forgot to mention this. I ran into a Cuban doctor the other day. You know, they're all throughout Latin America, right? And he confirmed everything you've heard and all that I've been saying in the past shows about how they're farmed out to other countries that pay Cuba $3,400 a month. And his take, he says he makes $390 a month, about 11% of that. The rest goes back to Havana. But he says in Cuba, doctors only make about $80 a month. So to live on $390 a month is still a big raise compared to the wages in Cuba. It's still minimum wage in the rest of Latin America. At least he says a lot of them get to sleep at the hospital and get to partake of the doctor's lounge and free food from the hospital cafeterias. He says he sends around $200 of that each month back to his family. So this doc lives on $190 a month in Latin America, where the minimum wage is around $300 to $400 a month. So he's living at sub-poverty levels. Well, we kind of knew that already, right? But then he told me something I didn't know. He said, when you land in the foreign country you're assigned in, you're met at the airport by a representative of the Cuban embassy who collects your passport. All you carry after that is a certified copy to show cops or other authorities if they somehow request your ID on the street. That means, he says, Cuban doctors can't even get a bank account in the country that they're assigned in because you need your real passport to open an account and to withdraw money. Oh, and something else I never knew. He said if you happen to be single, and they usually don't like single doctors to be farmed up, but some have been. Why, you might ask, besides the fact it's easier to cut and run if you're single? Because they've had problems in the past when a Cuban doctor has fallen in love with a local and wanted to get married. But you can't get married without your legal passport. Remember, the Cuban embassy in your assigned country is holding your passport. And the Cuban embassy knows that if you marry a local, you automatically get residency that leads to a passport. The Cuban government knows if that happens, the doc will go AWOL, legally. But without their original Cuban passport, none of that can happen. They can't get married, they can't open a bank account, they can't fly, they can't go through borders. They can't even get internet service or a smartphone without their original passport, unless, of course, they have someone else buy it in their name. Socialism. Ain't it grand? Then he told me the topper. He said the world thinks the Cuban government allows them to have 20 to 25% of the money that a country pays for each doctor. That'd be 20 to 25% of $3,600 a month. Instead, he said, we only get half of that while we're on the mission in a foreign country. The other half is withheld in Havana by the government, and we can only get it when we return. That's why, he says Cuban doctors, send a portion of our $360 a month back home to our families, even though an equal amount is building up in an account back home. But even that is not exactly correct. You don't get it in U.S. dollars. When you return, they convert it to pesos at the government rate, not the real rate. He says you lose about 50% that way. Socialism. Ain't it grand? All right, now getting back to how popping the everything bubble is affecting Latin America. On that theme, I've got this email from Jen, an expat insider seminar repeat offender. Oh, and about seminar repeat offenders. You know, with every single seminar I've ever done, I've had repeat offenders. Except the first seminar, that's logical, because how could they repeat if it was only one seminar? And you know, when people ask me, is the seminar worth it? How do I know I'm going to get my value for the money? Well, really, when you think about it, all you have to do is look at the numbers of repeat offenders. Would somebody repeat the seminar one, two, even three times if they didn't think it was absolutely worth it? Just the opposite. It really is the best indicator. Because, you know, if it wasn't worth it and people didn't get a hell of a lot out of it, I'd have zero repeat offenders, wouldn't I? Think about it. And if you're still on the fence about coming down to my August 2020 seminar, just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link. Did I say click on the link? Go ahead, click on it. And remember, if you sign up, you get a one-hour phone consult with me. That's part of the deal. Anyway, our repeat offender Jen says, question, Johnny, I understand that most of Latin America is in lockdown. How will this affect their economy? Will they be looking at a massive inflation as we will in the U.S.? Where will they get the money to pay all the bills if no one's working? I know of several expats who have bank accounts in CDs in Quetzales, that's Guatemalan money, because for a long time the Guatemalan currency has been very stable. Will it continue to be so? What's your take, Johnny? If there, or rather when there is a monumental collapse of the economy, other than real estate, what will be the changes in Latin America? What can we look forward to? I was made to believe that except for real estate, life in Latin America will continue to be the same because they don't have too far to fall. Do you believe this? While you're at it, Johnny, please send me the information about the home air filters you mentioned, the HEPA filters, and the solar panel companies too. Signed, Jen. Well, Jen, I sent you that HEPA filter stuff. You know, I have a really great little HEPA filter myself. I picked it up a little over a half a year ago before all this COVID stuff. I just figured, hey, you walk into your apartment or house after you've been gone on a trip for a couple of weeks or months, you come back and you see dust everywhere. Of course, it looks like dust, but it's dust mixed with a lot of city pollutants and stuff. So I thought, look, hey, in hospitals, they use HEPA filters all the time, so why not get a good one? So I did my usual exhaustive search. It took me hours and hours on the internet. And I've got an excellent little HEPA filter for around $100. In fact, what I really like about it is you can clean the filter a couple of times at least before you have to put a brand new one in, which costs around $20. And it really does clean up the air. noticeably. The one I have will do a nice job on up to 3 regular size rooms. So anyway, if you're really looking to clean up and tighten up your air supply, send me an email, theexpatfilings@gmail.com, and I'll send you the Amazon link. Of course, I know I am somewhat of a hypocrite. I hate Google, but I end up using it for Google Maps sometimes. But never do I do a Google search, though I do have a Gmail account. Who doesn't? But I never use it for crucial, critical, or sensitive things. For that, I use encrypted StartMail. I just love their disposable alias feature. Oh, and I'm a hypocrite about Amazon, too. I love the concept, but I absolutely hate the fact they've got contracts with the NSA, CIA, and run their cloud service. What the f*** up with that? They're deeply in bed with the U.S. surveillance state. How screwed up is that? But their shopping and delivery service is so valuable if you live in Latin America. Now that they're around and very efficient, there's nothing down here you can't get. Oh, and by the way, did you know that Teslas have a built-in HEPA filter that they use to recycle incoming and recirculating air? I did some checking, and I found out that Tesla's HEPA filter is 4 times better. In other words, it removes 4 times as much crap from the air than the best air filtration systems any other car company has. By the way, I haven't got an electric car yet. I'm waiting for Tesla to come out with a small SUV or a normal-looking pickup that doesn't look like it came out of a 1950s B-grade science fiction flick. Then, of course, I'll have a dedicated solar system to charge that thing up at home so I never have to spend a dime with the electric utility company. And I'll be talking about that on the show, just how to do that. I'll tell you the exact system I'm using and my recommendations all around. And really, the only reason I don't have a Tesla right now is because they're really too low to the ground for Latin America. For sure, within a couple of months, you'd rip out the undercarriage with those tumulos, you know, those speed bumps. Plus, down here, you've got the ever-changing minefield of potholes. Not good for the car or your nerves. However, if they made a small SUV or pickup truck, that'll give you 3 or 4 more inches of clearance. Plus, your tires would be wider and heftier, too. And believe me, down here in Latin America, that makes all the difference in the world. So for now, I'm waiting at a nice, small electric SUV or pickup, but I'm all set to put the solar charging system in. I'll keep you posted and walk you through it, so stay tuned. Oh, and of course, there are lots of other electric car competitors coming online now. So the best choice doesn't necessarily have to be a Tesla. But I figure for now anyway, they're way ahead of the pack and they always have been, so why not stick with the leader? Though all that might change, so do stay tuned. The dust will settle. All right, let's get to those questions. About the lockdown effect on the Latin American economy, it's more or less the same as what's happening up in the States. Only there's about a 3-week lag time down here, so when you peak out, with infected cases in California, New York, wherever. About 3 weeks later, the cases peak in most countries in Central America, and about 5 weeks later, they peak in South America. It just has to do with the way the virus is making its way around the world. And yes, of course, Latin America will be looking at massive inflation just like the U.S. will be looking at it very soon. Wait a minute, did I say Latin America? We'll leave that in. Warp speed, Mr. Sulu. Anyway, only as usual, it'll mostly track the dollar, so whatever inflation you guys get, it'll be the same down here. So then where will Latinos get the money to pay the bills if no one's working? Well, you heard me say on last week's show that most Latinos actually are working. They've not only started opening up places, but clandestinely, people have been working all the time. You know, they've got that small but obvious signaling going. They leave one of their blinds or window shutters halfway, and you just knock on the door, they let you in, you do your business, whether it's a clothing shop, barber shop, whatever. And they're saying by June 1st, most all the factories and malls will be open too. Oh, and about the Guatemalan currency being stable against the U.S. dollar. Yes, that's true. It's been perhaps the most stable Latin country currency in recent history. It's pretty much been hanging within the same range for the last 20 years against the dollar. Now, my advice to gringos and expats has always been, if you have extra cash and you want to put it in a CD, put it in a very short-term U.S. dollar CD here. Even though Guatemala has a very stable currency and it's paying nearly twice the interest rate of a U.S. dollar CD, I've always been gun-shy of CDs in foreign currencies. You just never know. Now, taking that point one step further, looking at the info page of a very solid bank here in Latin America, and right now, as of May 22nd, 2020, they're advertising a 2-year CD in the local funny money equivalent of around $20,000. They're offering 10.1% annual interest. That's in the local funny money. And compared to U.S. interest rates in the States, 10.1% is massive. Still, I wouldn't bite. But They have another CD they're advertising. I'm looking at it right now. A U.S. dollar CD, minimum 10 grand. It's a four-year CD, and they're paying 6% interest annually, which is also massive compared to U.S. bank CD rates. But personally, I wouldn't bite on that one either, even though the bank is very sound. Why? Because it's a four-year CD, and most probably we'll be into hyperinflation in 4 years, and you'll be screwed. Personally, I'd say in this blown-out bubble scenario, if I needed to put some U.S. cash into a CD, because I'm already stocked up on inflation hedge stuff, gold, silver, Bitcoin, etc., I'd want to keep it in a short-term 30, 60, or 90-day CD. So as the market shifted, I could cash out in a hurry and move it elsewhere. I'd never want to have U.S. dollars in a long-term instrument. Because, you know, even though the dollar is strong right now, we're in a deflationary cycle. It's just a temporary lull before big-time inflation does kick in. But remember, you do have to diversify. You have to have some cash around. I'd say a good idea is to have 6 months worth of cash on hand to cover all your bills. All I can say is if you have a lot of U.S. dollars sitting in a bank account somewhere or a CD, you must diversify into something that's inflation-proof. Or very shortly, within a year or two anyway, you're going to get creamed. For example, let's say you had $500,000. I know for some people that seems way out there. But others, no. If it was me, what I would do is put $100,000 into gold, $100,000 into silver, $100,000 into Bitcoin, keep some loose cash around the house, maybe $20,000 in hundreds, well hidden. I mean, from the kids, your delinquent nephews, and the cleaning lady, of course. Take the rest and put it into 30 or 60-day U.S. dollar CDs. Keep rolling them over, biding your time. While you're doing that, look for desperate sellers of houses, condos, and homesteads, and get ready to drop $100,000 or so on something worth twice or three times that. But that's just me. You can do what you want. You really have to protect yourself from what's coming down the pike. It won't be pretty. Oh, and Jen, you mentioned when the walls start tumbling down that Latinos won't have far to fall. Well, you're absolutely correct. Except that is for the upper middle class and wealthy Latinos, the ones who've positioned themselves as gringo wannabes. They're all tapped out. They've got no cash. Even before the COVID thing, they could barely pay their bodyguards and cleaning ladies on time. They're the ones, along with their entitled kids, who are really going to be hurting. But the Latino middle and lower middle classes? Not so much. Remember, the food supply is local. They've got four growing seasons and no heating or air conditioning bills. Unfortunately, none of that applies to you guys living up in the States. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. He knows Spanish.